Danilana Kitchen talks about food. Danilana Kitchen talks recipes. Danilana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the
Danilana Kitchen. The Danilana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Danilana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And thanks for joining us around our kitchen table today. Yes, we are still living in interesting times. First of the year here, we got a lot of out with the old and in with the new kind of things. And we have many, many challenges. COVID-19 is still affecting our lives. Last spring, we talked to some local business people about how COVID-19 was impacting local businesses.
Restaurants
specifically, yeah. our favorite gathering places, masks, social distancing. Can people like eat at the same table? We don't know these things. And we are still coping. We decided to ask around and find out more about what the pandemic's impact is on local restaurants. Joining us today is Sharon Stewart.
Yeah, Sharon is the owner of a fairly new restaurant called the Lockwood Cafe out on the northwest edge of town. Very wonderful place. I'm going to just say that I'm going to give you a couple of headlines. The U.S. lost 372,000 bar and restaurant jobs in December. That's just December. Also nationally, so it's been really hard on especially small or even locally owned or single proprietor restaurants. We're not talking about the big guys that have chains all over the country and are large, although I'm sure they're not happy about this. They're not facing the same difficulties as the singular restaurants in your local communities run by people that you know and love. So we're bringing Sharon Stewart on from the Lockwood Cafe. She's going to talk about how it's affected her business. Welcome, Sharon.
Hello. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Sharon, you were one of the lucky people on the face of the earth who started a brand new restaurant business just before COVID. How long were you open before all of this happened?
A whole 5 months. We were just in the midst of getting things under control and feeling like the ball was rolling and it was all starting to kind of jive. And then COVID hit.
Well, Sharon's, are you still calling yourself a coffee shop, basically?
You know what? I've actually just, the pandemic has given me some time to think. And some of the thoughts that have happened have been really around what the business is and kind of identifying who we are. And, you know, we're not a coffee shop. We're actually a cafe. And I feel like it took me a while to really own into that because I thought I was opening a coffee shop, but the truth is...
Yeah. You were starting with a small concept, which is very, very intelligent.
We talked a lot about that, didn't we?
Yes. Limit the menu. You can only do a few good things really well. So.
Yeah.
Now you're a cafe.
Yeah, we're a cafe. I feel like the vibe we have is kind of that European style cafe where you go get a small bite, you get a drink, you hang out, you meet people. It's kind of a gathering space. That's us.
And your thing basically is you do crepes.
Yes. Yes.
And of course, really good coffee.
Yes.
What other things do you feel characterize your restaurant?
I mean, I think we really try to be a space that takes on, you know, part of our, if we had a written mission, would be part of our written mission, is to really prioritize that we are a safe space. And that includes the food we put into our bodies, being healthy about what we're eating. We don't serve processed foods. We make everything from simple ingredients, but that are healthy. So, you know, the crepe is kind of an ideal palette to work with because you can put anything in that. So we do a lot of savory crepes and sweet crepes. And then even with our drinks, you know, trying to be as local as possible, make as much as we can in-house. So we make our own simple syrups. We get coffee from a local roaster, Morning Bell, who's amazing. We get our tea from Littlewoods. So really trying to be a space that that is as much a part of the community as it is to bring the community together, if that makes sense. A connector, a space that connects people.
And talk about your location and the architecture of your location.
So it is in an old grain elevator on Reliable Street. It's a really amazing physical space. It's a lot of it, the building is poured concrete. We've done a fair amount of renovation, but we also kept as much as we could raw and accessible to see. You know, the beauty of the space is that there is a lot of history, and there's so many people that come into Lockwood and immediately start to tell you, well, I would say this is a true story before COVID. We don't really have the same relationship right now, but people would come in and they would have a story about the space. Oh, my grandfather used to work here, or when I was a kid, I remember there was a shed over here that I stayed in while my dad, you know, worked in the elevator in the evenings because he was a farmer. Like, we just really heard a lot of amazing stories from people. So, you know, part of the intent was to keep the historical context of the space intact while taking it into the next phase of this space's life, I guess. So it's all very visible. You can see the history of the space just in the bare walls.
Well, and everybody in town has to know where it is because it's a prominent piece of the Ames skyline. It's, you know, you go out North Dakota running north of town and it's right on the railroad tracks. It's, I mean, tons and tons of concrete were poured into making that building when in the 50s, maybe?
Yeah, mid 50s.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And then part of the building is used for an art gallery space, right, Lynn?
Yeah, so attached to the cafe is a gallery space that Lindsay Nissen runs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, currently with COVID, the space is just kind of in a holding spot right now. We're trying to be very conscious of how the space functions and how it works. And also, you know, going back to that mission of being a safe space that includes, you know, the physical place that we're putting our bodies in. And so right now that the gallery space is kind of operating more as an online platform than a physical space of meeting and connecting with people.
Now, do you know if that's true at Alluvial also?
I believe Alluvial has this really great open area in their tasting room that used to be where they brewed the beer. And now that they've got the new brew house, they've been able to open that up for some indoor seating and have great ventilations, high ceilings. And so they have a space that does accommodate seating. I don't think they do any seating in the front of the tap house, but to be honest, I haven't checked with Elliot on that. I just know they do it in the back area.
Right. And they don't serve food. And then of course, in the warmer weather, they have a fabulous patio with all the prairie surrounding it.
Yes. So, one of my favorite patios. It's amazing. Yeah.
So what have you done to your business during the COVID-19?
So when COVID first hit, we actually just completely closed. It was so new and there were so many unknowns that we just decided the best course of action was to completely close. Also, at that point, there was unemployment for staff, and so we didn't feel like we were harming anybody's livelihood by closing. We felt like we were able to manage it financially, so we just closed our doors until September, but it might have been October. I think it was September. No, August. It was August 1st. The dates are all getting blurry now.
Yeah.
But it was when that unemployment ran out that we realized we needed to help provide the means of income for our staff and our crew that we work with. So we opened back up, but we opened with limited hours. So we went to being open Friday, Saturday, Sunday instead of 5 days a week. And that really afforded us to not have as high of labor cost. So our goal through the pandemic, starting when we reopened, was as long as we could do outdoor seating, to do outdoor seating. And then when the winter months hit, to just do carry out. So we're still in that phase. But by limiting our hours, we were really able to make a financial plan that allowed us to kind of break even. So we're not doing any big renovations. We're not spending any extras right now. We're running as minimally as we can, but it's affording us the ability to kind of just continue to break even through the pandemic and keep everyone on payroll as long as, or as much as we can. So that's kind of been our game plan. And, you know, one thing I will say is it's so easy to pass judgment on what other people are doing. But the truth is, this is a time when we are all having to make really hard decisions, and we don't know the factors that people are considering when making their own decisions. So the other thing that we've held by is, like, you know, respect us as a business that's doing the best we can, but also other businesses, just be kind, be gracious, support in any way you feel comfortable, but just generally, like, you know that this is a really hard time for a lot of people in the service industry. So just taking time to be as kind as possible to each other seems like a really important thing at this time of life.
Yes, it is. We, your cafe, Lockwood Cafe, is at the northwest edge of town, and it's just off the street that I drive home to my farm, and I drive by there often. And looking up and down the street, I always check to see, well, are they open? Are there people out? Because as a community gathering place, we forget, we really miss the fact that, oh, people can actually gather. There can actually be cars lined up, or in the summer there would be people outside. But yeah. Your place as a gathering place, we have probably a long ways to go to get back to that. But kind of checking on the health of the community and checking on the health of restaurants in general. Oh, is Sharon open? Is she open? Yes, she is. Well, and I'm so glad that you figured out a way to somehow do this, because it's difficult. It's difficult. Talk about some of your new ways to do business.
It's your innovations, Jim.
Yeah. How are you getting food to us?
So, you know, with the pandemic, it's definitely a time of resiliency. So you figure out, you have a little extra time to think, and you plan what you can do with what you have. And what you have includes your own energy and your time. And, you know, I've got two small kids. I couldn't be there 5 days a week running the show on my own. And I couldn't afford to pay staff if I didn't know how busy we were going to be. So, you know, we chose to limit the hours to 3 days a week. One of the things that started to kind of be a continual thought is that, how is there another way for us to provide something for the community wants or needs? And one of the first things we did is there's a customer of ours that's been a customer since we were in a pushcart cafe years ago. Malvika was a student at Iowa State, and she and I have talked about Indian food. She had recommended adding more Indian food to our menu. We currently serve a Southern Indian crepe called a dosa. And, you know, it was something where I love the idea, but it's not my wheelhouse. I'm not, you know, I don't come from an Indian family. I don't know the culture. I don't know the food context. I don't, you know, it's not my place. It's not my understanding, but she did, and she wanted to do something where she was able to make food. And so she started, kind of a business within our business of doing Indian takeout on Thursday night. And so, Lockwood takes a small percentage of the sales that covers our cost, and then the rest can go back into the person that's making the food. So one of the big limitations of starting a business, especially in the food industry, is the operational cost and the build out cost, right? That stops a lot of people right from the beginning.
It's huge. Yeah.
So to be able to have a space where, like, we're not using it in the evening, go ahead, use it, make food, sell food. You pick the price, you pick the meal. You do, you know, you do you, and let us be supportive in however we can. And so she started this Thursday Indian dinner night, and it became very successful. And one of the benefits to Lockwood was that it kind of built a relationship with a larger community that then learned about us, that didn't know about us, so that, you know, that we saw more people coming in through the weekends, and we saw
old win-win.
Right. And that's what a good business deal should be. Everyone should win in a good business deal. So, so then when Malvika graduated, she introduced us to Rama, who is an amazing cook and just a phenomenal, wonderful human. And so Rama stepped into Malvika's role and kind of has just continued to run with it. And we feel so thankful and grateful to have her, you know, kind of bringing the amazing food that she is and just the liveliness and the love. And just, she's just a one. I can't gush enough about Rama. Anyone who knows Rama knows this.
So how does this work? Is it an order placed online and then it's picked up at a certain time and it's a set menu, or what's the?
Yeah. So we do two evening meals a week. We do Thursday night with the Indian meal that Rama does. We call it like a kitchen takeover. And then Sunday we do a Lockwood dinner. We call it Jars of Love. So you get two mason jars of food. One's hot, you know, bowl, like a salad or something along that lines. And the other is more like one's a soup and one's a salad. Huh. Other way around. Okay. Not a hot salad, a hot soup.
And are these still vegetarian?
Uh-huh. Yep. Everything is vegetarian. Okay. And actually our jars of meals or jars of love, we're making vegan. So we're really having fun experimenting with our menu and trying out new recipes. I'm currently addicted to cashew butter as a thickener. It adds so much flavor and richness.
I want to give you a little heads up here. Congratulations to you. Because as a chef, when I have to make a vegan or vegetarian menu, I really, really try hard to just make good food, so that if someone who is not a vegan, they will enjoy it as well. And I think you do the same thing, Sharon. So if you guys are the listeners, if you're thinking, oh, but it's vegan, you should try it. You won't even be thinking about it's vegan. You'll just be thinking, oh my goodness, this tastes really good and it's really healthy.
Oh, I have to tell you, just as a bunch of people that love to cook, Austin makes really amazing black beans. And when we decided to transition from being vegetarian to vegan,
that's my husband.
Yeah. Yes. To making the black beans vegan, he used to use goat cheese to thicken his black beans, which just added a really nice flavor and, mm-hmm. you know, made it creamy. So because of the whole notion, like you were just talking about, how do you make food taste good to where you don't even think of it as being vegan, to thicken his black beans, he roasts eggplant and garlic and makes a puree out of it that thickens the black beans, but then adds this really lovely smokiness flavor to it. It's just, yeah. So anyway, back to what you're saying.
Brilliant. Good idea. Yeah.
Limitations breed creativity. If I have this
good. Okay. Sure.
It's my tagline.
More vegetables in it. There's no such thing as too many vegetables, right?
How has the response been? How many takeout meals do you do at a time? I don't know. I love to cook, but I can't imagine cooking for a crowd. How's the response been, Sharon?
So one of the things, with the way that we do it is you order ahead. So we post it on our Instagram and our Facebook, Lockwood Cafe on Instagram, or on, I don't know how you do the tag things, but however those show up on your social media. We post the meal with a link about the day before, usually around between noon and one. And then you can go and you order online. And we cut off the orders between noon and one the day of the meal. And so then we know how many meals to make. We don't have any food waste. Because the whole idea is, again, going back to our early financial decision, let's eliminate as much waste as possible. And that includes from our budget. So we didn't want to have any food waste because that costs money. So if we know how many meals to make, then we don't lose any money. We know exactly what our profit margins are. And it's the same with the Indian meal. Rama knows how many meals she needs to make. So she's not overbuying produce. She doesn't waste any food.
Well, and you're not putting in extra labor either, making food that no one wants. Oh, it's, yeah.
So this is, so we do this for both the Indian meal and the jars of love. And, you know, it ranges anywhere from, we set the limit of meals in Square, because we use the online Square ordering site, to be whatever we feel like we can handle. So last week, we just had a long week. There was a lot going on, and we decided for the jars of love, we just couldn't handle that many meals. It was too much for us that week. So we set the meal limit at a number, I think it was like 50. And it was a number that was very doable for us. We knew that recipe. We knew what we could do. It fit within the time frame that we could handle. Other weeks, we're like, oh, we could easily do 100, and we'll set it for... So we make the limit of meals whatever we feel comfortable doing. And so when Rama was starting, she would start with more, you know, she usually, her meals are way more popular than our meals, rightfully so, I would say. She's got years of experience on us, and just an amazing, amazing, amazing cook. So she sells anywhere from 75 to 100 meals on average each week. And she's got a system down and is, you know, very capable of doing that. I'm still learning how to cook for, you know, 100's too much for me. 50 to 75, that's a range I can do on a casual Sunday.
Well, you got to have the right equipment for larger amounts. You got to have bigger pots and pans. You got to, yeah.
We just ordered another big pot. We're moving up in the world.
Love the big pots.
Yep. The big pot. Tell us more about your Jars of Love project.
And
it goes beyond just feeding your immediate customers.
Yeah. So Jars of Love stemmed from the idea of, you know, in a pandemic, how do we show that we care about ourselves, and how can we show that we care about others? And, you know, one of the things that we do to care for ourselves is to take care of our physical body and eat healthy. So I researched, you know, what do they say is good for your body in COVID, right? What are the nutrients that you need in your system? And, you know, found vegetables and ingredients that kind of support healthy choices, and kind of tried to make meals that reflect that. So I cook with a lot of carrots.
Let's just point out, because people probably really want this information, really the food that's good for you in COVID are the things that build your immune system.
Yes.
Which are things we want to be eating all the time. Let's hope that we have all improved our eating habits after COVID, you know, basically lots of fruits and vegetables.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, like going back to the fruits and vegetables, the less processed, the better. It's the things that we've already known, but now it seems like the impact of those decisions are a lot bigger.
It's not that there is a specific food that you can eat that will help you fight COVID. It's
absolutely,
you know, it's just having a really clean, healthy diet.
Yes.
It helps
exactly.
Everybody for everything. So there.
Yes. And the more we take care of our bodies, the more our bodies can fight off attack, right?
Of anything.
Exactly. So the meals are based around that. And then one of the things that Lockwood was really missing in the pandemic, and I speak for myself, but I also think that I think that the crew that we work with would feel the same way, is we were really missing the human connection. You know, Lockwood was built with the idea of being a place of gathering, a place of people meeting each other that maybe wouldn't meet each other otherwise. And when COVID hit and we were just doing carry out or early on outdoor seating, there was just this, I just missed having this house full of conversation and connection. It just felt distant and not the same. So we were trying to think of ways that we could be connectors in the community. And one of the things that seemed like an easy thing to do was to cook for other people, cook for strangers. And we were thinking about who are the strangers that probably need a healthy meal the most. And we thought about people that work at the hospital, knowing that they've taken on a huge, huge load of additional work and stress and are all doing it because they care about us and want us to be healthy. So we opened up an option to buy a healthcare worker a meal at the same time that we do the Jars of Love. And for every meal purchased, Lockwood donates a second meal. And so we break even on our cost for the healthcare meals, but it's the area where we really benefit is the feeling of connection. And it allows people in the community who want to give a way to give. And so far we've been averaging anywhere from, you know, it's comes out, I just did the numbers, about 75 meals a week is what we've been averaging, give or take.
Drop them off at the hospital?
Yeah, we call the hospital and arrange times when it'll be beneficial for them and works with our schedule as well. So, you know, some days I drop them off for the dinner, the evening crew. Sometimes it's for the morning crew. Sometimes it's for the overnight crew. We just kind of, every week we go by what works for them and what works for us. And so, yeah, that's been a really powerful experience to feel like we can be a part of facilitating kindness to people who definitely deserve it.
Make yourself useful, right?
That's a really good solution. Good job, Sharon. We'll come back and talk to Sharon a lot more about what's going on in her restaurant and other restaurants around Ames. I want to take this opportunity to say this is KHOI, and you are listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are talking about restaurants in the time of challenging times. And around our kitchen table with us is Sharon Stewart. And she's been talking about how Lockwood Cafe is kind of changing its strategy a bit, but they're still there. They're still there. And that is what is important. Donna, you talk to other restaurants in the area.
One thing I want to be clear about is, you know, we have lots of restaurants in Ames, and the majority of them are probably large national chains. I'm not personally worried too much about them. They can get their government funding and all of what we don't want to lose are our really personal, homegrown, smaller restaurateurs and entrepreneurs locally. So, and Sharon is one of them, and we're so glad to hear that we're going to have Lockwood Cafe through and after the pandemic. We also called around to a few other places. I emailed Nadav Mayer, who's from the Morning Bell, which is our coffee shop on the east end of Main Street. He wrote, "Morning Bell is doing amazingly well considering. The community has really stepped up and voted with their wallets that they want us to survive the pandemic. We are extremely thankful that we are able to push forward and get past the current challenges. Health has been good for us. Our staff has worked really hard to keep us open by following all the COVID-related restrictions. But then Nadev said, but being open is great for everyone's mental health." I think you would echo that, Sharon.
Absolutely.
And you serve Nadev. So Nadev is a coffee shop, but he also is a coffee bean roaster and importer. And you serve Morning Bell coffee out at your place, too.
Yes, we love Morning Bell. Nadav is amazing. And you can also order his coffee online as well if you don't feel comfortable going out. So that's always an option, too, with Morning Bell.
We're doing a lot more online. My goodness, I'm glad it is working out. Yes.
I also called out at the Mucky Duck Pub, and some nice young man answered the phone and assured me that they are open. I'm not sure what the restrictions are, but there are some and that they are complying. Now, one of the things that Sharon said, and this is true for every individual restaurateur who's making these decisions, a lot depends on the strength of your HVAC system. Your
HVAC.
That's heating and cooling. Yeah. And it also, in restaurants, it's especially a big deal because, you know, you've got cooking and fumes, and most places have fires, some places have grills. And so all of that air has to be run through cleaning systems. It also helps with fire hazards and stuff like that. So there is a thing called a scrubber, which is basically cleaning the air. It's a filter. And Sharon was saying, what were you saying about yours? That was a factor in you deciding.
Yeah. So when we decided, we did the outdoor seating when we first opened in August, and that was working really well. Once it started getting cooler and we closed the garage doors and went to the indoor ordering system, we decided to do carry out because our air filtration, we're just such a small space that we only have one intake. And our intake is, if you're not familiar with the space, it's kind of one big square open space. And then there's a hallway where there's the restrooms, and it's at the end of that hallway. And so all of the air in that space essentially moves through and out that hallway. So we just felt like the best thing we could do would be to do carry out, unless if we wanted to completely redo the HVAC, which goes back to our business decision of deciding to just break even. And we decided to not spend the extra for such a small space and rather just to do carry out for this time.
Very good. Well, plus Sharon has two big garage doors in the summer. You can open those too.
Exactly. Yep. We look forward to doing that again.
A fresh air. So apparently the Mucky Duck is open for takeout as well. Then we called Cornbread. We wanted to know what Ryan Newstrom was doing. Now that's another new restaurant in town. So and they were going gangbusters, and they seem to be doing fine. We're glad to report. Now they did a lot of things because they are doing takeout for sure, but they're also open because they have done a lot of things. They added more air scrubbers to their probably already hefty ventilation system in there. They are running at 50% capacity. Their tables are spaced. Everyone is masked. They do extra, you know, sanitation practices, certainly on the tables, but also on the banisters and all of those other places. They also over there, now this is in the old train station on the western end of Main Street. It's a fabulous restaurant. And they have built an outdoor patio, which now is, they've put heaters in and they've surrounded it with plastic. So there are also six tables outside on the patio. And she says sometimes the patio is warmer than even in the restaurant. So we're happy to report that they are also doing well. The bar is no seating at the bar, although you can certainly. Now, Sharon, don't you make some of the simple syrups for their bar?
Yeah, we have. I think one of their winter drinks is using the syrup right now as well. I'm not 100% sure, to be honest. But yes, we do. We make simple syrups for a couple of places in town. Morning Bell, Cornbread, Farm Grounds in Nevada. It's...
Well, give us some flavor profiles, Miss Simple Syrup.
So, you know, we stick with some of the basics, the vanilla, the chocolate. But we love, we have a cardamom syrup that's really good. Our chai syrup is one of the more complex flavors.
In it besides ginger?
So we use a combination of ginger, cardamom, anise, bit of cinnamon. Good. Yeah, anise, right, it needs that little nose spice to it.
Yes, good.
And then peppercorns to give it the spice as well. And gosh, I think that's most of it. And then we finish it with the black tea at the end so that it does get the black tea of the chai flavor. And then we have we do a plain ginger syrup as well. We've got a lavender rose, which is really popular.
That's lovely.
house-made lemonades have been something that we've really enjoyed making at Lockwood. So
Sure, and did Lana and I get you hooked on our rose geranium yet?
Oh my goodness, it's so good. I haven't been making a syrup with it because I don't have the quantity. I need to get the quantity, but the flavor.
We could work on that next summer, you know.
Okay. Well, we have those community gardens out close to Lockwood. So I think, I don't know if
Lana is our supreme gardener and has just, she's prolific with the rose geranium.
we'll see how it goes. Yes, we do. I want to mention that some restaurants are still open, but there's been some changes to the landscape here in
we have lost a few.
Yeah, plus 39 north of town. I read that they are no more. They just couldn't stay open. And Bar La Tosca was one of my...
On Main Street.
There was a closed sign. It's a for sale sign. However, Bar La Tosca is owned by people that also own Stomping Grounds in the Campus Town area. And there's been an interesting kind of melding of parts of Bar La Tosca, including the chef, that were taken over to the place in Campus Town. So
So Chef Brett DeBleek, who was at Bar La Tosca, is now the chef at Stomping Grounds, and he's a good chef too. We have some good chefs in town, Sharon.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
We've got some good gossip here.
And the funny part is, not only did they take the chef, they took the bar from Bar La Tosca and moved it to Stomping Grounds, which is, I think, a very clever idea. It was a lovely bar.
Kind of adds some class there. So there's some opportunity for some reshuffling there. And that will be another good community gathering place. It always was, always will be. And we're looking forward to that being open full bore again. Another local gathering spot that kind of had its ups and downs, especially during the summer. Cafe Baudelaire on Lincoln Way, right in Campus Town. Cafe Baudelaire almost was on the edge of not making it. And owner Claudio Gianello said, thanks to an outpouring of support, they plan to stay open because they got a big boost. He let people know that, hey, things are not so good here. And people started to respond by saying, people should stop complaining and start buying food and drinks online. And they did. So we're glad.
Right. He also owns Macubana as well.
Very good.
Right.
So. It's nice to know that things are hanging in there. Maybe not full speed, but they are hanging in there. And here is another. Yeah, I love this. Is another success story. This goes a little beyond restaurants, but on the Donalana Kitchen here, we talk about farmers. And there's a farmer that we like to follow because she was on our show a couple years ago, and I've been following her farm. Shelby Smith is in the cricket business. Talk about your small scale livestock.
It's pretty entrepreneurial, right?
It is. Who would think? She came back and said, I'm going to make a living by farming in a whole new way.
Growing, she is from a farming family here in Ames. Yeah.
Came back and said, Dad, I'd like to farm. I want to grow crickets. And so she started out, I think, in 2018.
What does she call herself? A cricket wrangler?
I think so.
Something like that.
Anyway, she started in 2018, and well, she's really good at marketing herself too. And so believe it or not, 2020 was a boom year for her. She kept on growing her crickets and growing her crickets. And she built a bigger facility, in rural Ames where she could raise more crickets. I don't know how much bigger you need to get. Maybe she put in a couple.
Bigger than a closet, maybe?
Yeah, put in a couple more of them tubs there. And so she realized things were getting a little hectic there. And now she is going to get product on her crickets, dried and flavored crickets on the shelves in Wheatsfield. She's got her product at Junior's General Store on Main Street in Collins. She sells at the Ames Farmers Market. Now she's in 21 retail stores, including the Hy-Vee stores. And Her top sellers include, and these are good, barbecued roasted crickets, salted caramel energy bars, and chocolate mocha energy bars with crickets in them. And her favorite cricket flavors are dill pickle crickets, hot and spicy roasted crickets, and lemon energy bars. Oh, my.
Well, so let me explain the selling points of crickets is, I mean, because it doesn't spring to mind as your favorite snack food, right? They're very high in protein and very low in calories. So they are extremely healthy, and they're also environmentally a very good source of protein and nutrient dense. And she has done a lot to make them, you don't go, oh, I think I just ate a bug. You know, she does these energy bars and, you know, like Sharon, she's very entrepreneurial and she's creative with her flavors, and you can buy them. I have eaten them.
Oh, cool. So three cheers for Shelby Smith. She plans for 2021 to add 100 new retailers. Oh, crickets. That is an Iowa product too. And get this. She's looking for growers to help her. Be a contract. More cricket farmers. She said she's
Sharon, you could have a cricket farm.
I thought about it.
It could be fun for the children, you know?
Yeah. There you go. Anyway, get this. Each of the contract growers can raise between 1 million and 1.5 million crickets every 5 weeks. Do the math.
That's high turnover. Right?
It is. And for more information on becoming a contract grower, contact Shelby Smith. Her business is called Jim and Eat Crickets. G-Y-M, Jim, N-E-A-T, crickets at gmail.com. And if you want to find out more about her business, we talked to Shelby Smith in August 21st of 2018. And if you want to find that show, go to www.khoifm.org. Find the Donalana Kitchen Place page. Go into our website and find the August 21st, 2018 show to find out a whole lot about crickets. So Sharon, crickets. Have you tasted the crickets?
I have. Actually, my sister-in-law, it's one of her favorite things that she can't get where she's at. And so I always try to get some extra crickets to mail her.
Maybe she should take up cricket farming and grow her own.
I think there's potential there.
You just need a shoebox, you know.
Well, it is. It's kind of like having like sourdough on the shelf, a little bigger, but it's a little thing. And I don't. As far as farming crickets, they're a little bit too squirmy for me. But I do like the taste of them. So that's some good news. And who would have thought in this challenging year that there could be some tiny livestock that is just doing quite well. Thank you. Yes, it is.
Maybe we need to team with her and do a dinner where she makes a whole cricket meal.
I like it.
Well, you know, the thing is, you can buy it just straight ground. I don't know how, does she freeze dry them or roast them or something? She has some simple process, and the powder itself has very little flavor. You could add it to almost anything where you wanted to up the protein content. That and kelp are my favorite two new up and coming ideas for creating more food sustainably. You know, I'm not into these manufactured test tube lab meats, but there are things that we could up our game on as a civilization and, you know, feed more people with.
Yeah.
Plants from the ocean, and also things like insects.
Well, yeah, we're all on this planet together, and I think we better kind of open our eyes and look at things.
Right. There are things still within nature without genetically modifying something that do provide high quality protein with lower inputs, and certainly can be done in ways that are sustainable for the environment. And crickets, that's one of them.
It's, you're listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. For more information, go to www.khoifm.org. Find out more about our show. Find out more about this nice radio station.
Well, Sharon.
We are back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. I want to thank you, Sharon, for being with us today. Give us your contact information. We can get food from you two nights a week. So how do we contact you, Sharon?
Yeah, so you can find Lockwood Cafe on Facebook or Instagram. Just look for Lockwood Cafe. And then we do a Thursday night Indian dinner. Well, Rama does a Thursday night Indian dinner. Lockwood is open for carryout Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. And then we do a Sunday evening carryout dinner as well. Both of the carryout meals do require pre-order, which are accessible through both of our social media platforms. And yeah, we're here.
Well, we're glad you're still here and you will continue to be here when our life goes back to some kind of perhaps more thoughtful normal. And we look forward to being able to come out and sit in the cafe and join you for a crepe.
Very good.
Especially, good. Sharon, are you doing buckwheat crepes yet?
We have the buckwheat. We just got a huge bag of buckwheat from Lana. I can see the smile through the through the radio. From Lana, remind me the farmer's name.
Earl Hafner at Early Morning Harvest. So this is Iowa buckwheat, grown in Iowa, milled in Iowa, from Panora.
Yes. And so we will
be. Yum.
Yeah. So we're adding a buckwheat crepe once we go back to Woo-hoo! 5 days a week, potentially 6 days a week. We'll see. Then we'll add the buckwheat crepe.
See, something to look forward to. Thank you very much, Sharon.
Thank you.
Sharon Stewart, Lockwood Cafe.
Good. I want to mention that this coming weekend, traditionally.
Well, it's not just, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
It is. It is January 21st, 22nd, 23rd. It is the annual Practical Farmers of Iowa annual conference, and it usually happens at the end of January, usually on the coldest day of the year.
With the most snow.
Oh, with snow, and it's usually quite a challenge to get there. However, this is a new year, and PFI is dealing with the pandemic by making everything live, not live.
Virtual live.
Virtual live. Everything. They've got a great system. figured out, and everything, the whole conference will be online, and you can find out more practicalfarmersofiowa.org. Find out more there. They've got all kinds of great stuff coming up, and including the Donalana Kitchen as part of the conference is presenting a session called Live from Donna's Kitchen. Tell us about what we're going to talk about. It's on Saturday.
It's Saturday at, I think, 11 or something. And also afterwards, we will have a link for that, which we will tell you about. Once the conference is over, it'll be publicly available. So what Lana and I decided to do for Practical Farmers of Iowa is we had Megan Filbert on, and we cover a lot of things that Practical Farmers of Iowa is doing because it's all about food systems and farming and the things that Lana and I are very interested in, very wonky stuff sometimes. So Megan Filbert, who is their livestock coordinator, was on at the beginning of COVID. We were talking about, of course, the effects of the virus on food system and production, and there were some pretty egregious and horrible stories going. But one thing Megan said was at PFI, she had had an astounding number of phone calls from farmers who wanted to get into direct marketing their cows and pigs and other livestock. And of course, that's very encouraging because that builds up the local food systems. So I thought, well, one way that we can support that, I mean, you know, that means farmers who want to take their animals right into the more local systems of slaughtering, you know, like at Story City Locker and many of the other fine smaller locker places that we have in Iowa, and then sell them directly to the consumer. So you know where your animal came from, how it was raised, et cetera, et cetera. Also, when a farmer does that, even though he has to do the extra work of the marketing, he does make a much higher percentage of the profit. And then all of that money stays in our local communities. I mean, it's, you know, as we were saying, win, win, win. So Lana and I decided that we would talk about how to use all of the pieces of the animal, what people call the nasty bits or the icky bits or the awful. So we have put together a little cooking show that shows how to use bones to make stock, bone broth, how to eat the marrow from the bones and why, one of my favorite things, how to cook a tongue and get people to eat it. Yum.
Got me to eat it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And of course, the most difficult thing to get people to eat is liver. So my trick for getting people to eat liver, except for people who really just love liver, I being one of them, like liver and fried onions or something like that, but a liver pate recipe. So we filmed all this last week and it will go up on air, and we're thrilled to be encouraging you to eat things like hearts and tongues and oxtails, beef tails, whatever.
It's all good.
It's all good.
And they're on the Donalana Kitchen webpage. Donna updated her pate recipe.
A liver pate recipe.
So you can go to the recipe page, recipe section on our Donalana Kitchen page, and there's Donna's pate 2021. How come you updated it?
We had put it up there probably 5 years ago, and I use the same recipe because I really like the way it comes out. And so I was reading through it. I thought, you know, we could improve this. We didn't really change the recipe, but I did change how I explained things in the recipe and double check my measurements and that sort of thing. I also want to mention that on Netflix, I happened to watch this week on Chef's Table, there is one of their issues of episodes is about Dario Cecchini, pardon my Italian, but anyway, he is a butcher from the Chianti region in Italy, and he also talks about how important it is to use all of the bits. And so if you wanted to look at that part right now, it's kind of yum. It's a lot about, you know, meat cooking, meat using all of the things so that you're not wasting this precious animal who's, you know, who you have slaughtered, basically. So we did it, and Dario is doing it, and it might encourage you to do it yourself. And if you think you can't find any of the icky bits, I know for sure that Ty Gustafson has them out at Story City Locker. I was able to pick up hearts, plenty of bones, brains and tongues and oxtail.
Good news. Yes, yes, yes. You have been listening to the Donalena Kitchen. Thank you to Sharon Stewart for being with us today, talking about coping with COVID and restaurant. It's always nice to share restaurant gossip for the local community here. You've been listening to the Donalena Kitchen. Support this fine radio station. We had music today by the band Bare Necessities. We heard Orboggy, and we're going out with Jig for Jenny. Jig for Jenny. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy, as usual. Eat good food and enjoy life.
To listen to happy foot-tapping music? Then join me, John Bassard, host of Hot Jazz Review every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. We play mostly music from the early 1900s, ragtime, jazz, blues, and current bands playing songs written in the early 1900s. Join me this Wednesday at KHOI FM 89.1.
This is Lana Noctigal from the Donalena Kitchen, and I'm here to tell you to wear a mask during these strange times. Wear a mask, keep your distance, wash your hands, stay home if you're ill, and be kind to each other.